Reading from the Narada Bhakti Sutras 34. Tasya sadanani dayant yachaya. Standard authorities have described the methods for achieving devotional service. Having described the essence of parabhakti, the highest stage of devotional service, Narada now turns to the practices one must perform to reach that stage. Practice of bhakti is called sadhana bhakti. Narada previously stated that bhakti was its own means, that it did not depend on anything else, specifically jnana or knowledge. And as Srila Prabhupada points out, bhakti does not even depend on the devotee's practice. Krishna consciousness cannot be aroused by practice. Actually, there is no such practice. When we wish to develop our innate capacity to put for devotional service, there are certain processes which, by our accepting and executing them, will cause that dormant capacity to be invoked. Such practice is called sadhana bhakti, the nectar of devotion. Page 20. The rules and regulations of bhakti are meant to cure a conditioned soul of the madness that causes his bondage and suffering. Srila Prabhupada writes, Nectar of Devotion 21, as a man's mental disease is cured by the directions of a psychiatrist, so this sadhana bhakti cures the conditioned soul of his madness under the spell of Maya, material illusion. Narada says that the methods he will teach have been given by the acharyas, those who teach by both word and deed. Bhakti can be taught only by Vaishnava acharyas and their representatives, not by the teachers of comparative religion or impersonalists in the guise of bhaktis. Narada himself is one of the greatest acharyas, so his own sayings are sufficient. Still, following the parampara tradition, he quotes previous acharyas and also gives his own thoughts, insights. Thus, his teachings are acceptable to all, regardless of sampradaya or particular founder acharya. Here, Narada uses the word gayanti, they sing, because the acharyas joyfully teach the principles of bhakti. Om jnana timarandasya jnananjana shalakaya taksur unmulatam yena tasmai sri gurave namaha sri chaitanya amano bhishtam tapitam yena bhutale shayam rupa kadamayam dati sapadantikam Panchakalpa-tarubhyascha, Kupashindu-bhayevacha, Patitanam bhavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo namo namah, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So greetings from Sri Vrindavan Dham. It's a wonderful winter in Bhagavad Gita, it says, of seasons, I am the Heman season, the winter. You kind of feel it here. Everything's clean and clear. The weather has yet to get cold in any uncomfortable way, at least from the And yesterday I went with Giriraj Swami and Indrajumna Swami. Actually, I took them to someone they know who has this quaint temple in Vrindavan that no one ever goes to. And it's a very, very old temple. 400 or 500 years old. Established by disciples of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. They say that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami himself had visited that temple. Just run by a simple family, but there was a huge library, very, very old manuscripts that they donated to the Vrindavan Research Institute. But they kept one of the books themselves, which is the oldest existing copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita written on the leaves or parchment. I don't know why. I'm not expert in those things. Perhaps even scribed by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. So we went to see it. It was very wonderful. Just to get the association of the people I went to and then took prasadam there. Vrindavan is that type of place where you just execute Krishna consciousness here and doors open up to days of yore. You see the culture and the nice people here. And anyway, and because it's Vrindavan, that wonderful phone that I had with such clear reception that was costing me less than $1 an hour for my phone, just wouldn't turn on today. So I'm prepared. I have the backup phone with the other plan, which of course is probably 10 or 12 times as much. Class may have to end a little early for that reason. I'm not sure I have that amount on this phone. And also, I'm going to the Sanskrit school, which is now, it was in Govardhan, located in Vrindavan, which I've been connected to for many years to give the Bhagavatam class, so they'll be picking me up. But let's discuss today's verse. It's this exposition on bhakti. And as you remember, we had just discussed a relation of other paths. And what was highlighted about bhakti, and this is an extremely important point in understanding devotional service, is that devotional service, selfless devotion, is not just a sadhana, a means to achieve perfection, but it is the consciousness that exists on the very level of perfection. The only difference is stages of development and maturity. Practice of devotional service is the consciousness of devotional service, or the consciousness of perfection that we're aspiring for. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma dinavritam anukuyena krishna anu shilanam bhaktir uttama. It's activities intended for the pleasure of God without any tinge of selfishness. The attainment of that consciousness is the awareness and revelation of the soul. See, it's a, you can't say that in other processes, karma, jnana, yoga. They're practices to achieve something else. And therefore, the practices themselves are not filled with joy or love. They have a sense of personal accomplishment, and they're means, not ends. They're things that don't exist in the ultimate perfection. The ultimate perfection is not a consciousness of endless analysis and renunciation or material enjoyment. Consciousness of rasa, of perfected and appropriate love. And therefore, although jnana, philosophical analysis and renunciation, can help you in the sense that it can detach you from the world, which is certainly part of the direction of heading towards an absolute perfected consciousness. It can't cause that. Can only bring you to maybe an awareness or perception of it, but it can't bring you there. You can only be brought there by God's grace, which comes in a devotional and loving relationship with Him. Tesham satatiyatanam bhajatam prithipurvakam dadami buriyogam swamye. For those who worship me with faith and devotion, I give them the knowledge by which they come back to me. So it has to be given in relationship. Philosophical analysis or yoga has nothing to do with relationship, unless there's an element of bhakti. But then it is the bhakti and not the yoga or the jnana. But perhaps even the expression of these things in devotion. But ultimately, they're external to the self. The self is a servant of Krishna, a servant of God. And unless we act as a servant of God, we can't perfect becoming a servant of God. It's just like any relationship. It begins with love, and it should end with love. It's a real relationship. And you won't get love unless you love. Eric Fromm, in The Art of Loving, discusses the common misconception that people have in the modern world, that love is some type of hormonal, infatuation. But he actually says that love is something that you work at by love. It's something that should mature. And when you have the misconception that love is something else than that, some infatuation or something, then the relationships end and one becomes disappointed. But it's something that should be matured. And same thing with God. So bhakti, sanjayate bhakti. And bhakti is the cause of bhakti. And then the example was given of the king. He doesn't relish the meal by looking at the meal. He doesn't relish his palace by looking at the palace. He has to enter the palace. He has to eat the meal. In the same way, just by analysis, you can get a view of reality, but you cannot get an experience of reality. So, this is the relationship between Jnana, philosophical analysis, the path of philosophical analysis, and bhakti. Now we're in a new section, and the section is how to attain bhakti. And it's going to explain the many important the roles that different practices, core practices, have in attaining bhakti, but gives the primacy in that attainment to the mercy of the great souls. And the mercy of God. That's the most important thing. So really, it'll come down to it. We're going to study this maybe for a couple of classes. It'll come down to it that our practices are making us receptive to the mercy of God. Or they may even inspire the mercy of God. But they cannot cause the mercy of God. For one thing, the mercy of God and the mercy of devotees is greater than anything we can do to deserve it. So when we get it, it's never that we're the cause of it, in the sense that we earned it, or we paid for it, or we can do anything, chant any amount of rounds, do any amount of dandavat parikrams to earn or cause that mercy. But we can beg for that mercy. And we can perform spiritual practices to clean our hearts so that it's more sensitive and receptacle to that mercy. And we can cultivate the practice of humility by accepting the authority of Krishna as it comes through his devotees and many manifestations, even from the teachers and parents or whatever. Acharyamam vijaniyam nabhamanyeta karichit. Krishna says, I am the Acharya. Do not envy. That's what prevents us from advancing in bhakti. Bhakti is very simple, but we block the effect by our egotism and envy. One way we can look at bhakti is the association with acts and objects of devotion, which have that influence or effect to put devotion in our hearts. but we will not feel it if we're proud. The Sri Bhakti Sandarbha describes how powerful is the effect of the Mahabhagavat. A devotee, a real devotee, how powerful is that effect? And that everyone will feel it, except one who is proud of the little knowledge that they have, that shuts their ears and shuts their heart to the mercy of God as it comes through the lotus mouth of the pure devotees. So it's going to describe these different practices that help to undo egotism. But of course, it's not just jnana getting rid of egotism, but it's creating real egotism, real egoism, excuse me, which is I am a servant of Krishna. Creates that feeling and that desire that I am a servant of Krishna, I am a servant of Krishna. It puts one in the locus standi of a servant of Krishna. Helps one not fight for the center. Helps one to move to the periphery, where one can get a perspective of God in the center and others in the center as a Vaishnava. I think it was Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, Srila Bhakti Rakshaka Sridhar Maharaj, who's a great Vaishnava scholar, great devotee. Got a realization, I think it was him who described the spiritual world as the land of gurus. Because everything is God. Everything is part of God. The part may not be God, but everything is part of God. And therefore, in that sense, when one develops spiritual consciousness, one wants to serve everyone and sees everyone in a reverent way. Just like there's the body, the hand is not the whole. If you serve the body, you may serve the hand. The foot is not the whole body, but to serve the body, you may. So to serve God, you may serve others. Of course, you have to be very clear that serving others doesn't mean just their whims. Naturally, you want to please them and serve those desires that are actually in the person's benefit, not just any whim. And therefore, the spiritual describes the land of gurus. And when one is spiritually aware, he sees everything as worshipable except oneself, because one is in the position of object for God and others, for their service. When that's real Vaishnav. Real Vaishnav. You can't separate the term Vaishnav from humble. Focused on the needs and desires of God and others. So here in this verse it says that exemplars have sung the various means to seek the divine. Now, Narada is explaining a subject matter. He has his own standing, his own credentials, as a great known spiritual person, but yet to lend credence to even what he says. He's referencing the great acharyas. This point cannot be stressed enough. Faith is the precursor to knowledge. Because trust enables one to consider and put the effort in to consider what the teacher says. Because understanding things take effort. And what to speak of applying them, which is part of understanding them. It takes effort. It takes austerity. We have to reject the irrational impulses of the mind and senses that are against the truth. It takes effort. So to understand the truth and to apply the truth in order to realize the truth takes effort. And no one makes effort without faith. No one makes effort without trust. And no teacher will give knowledge if he doesn't feel that people have the faith in his understanding of knowledge. That faith is not there, the teacher cannot give. We discussed this many, many times. The truth is not 100% correlate with what one sees. And if some of the things that one sees as truth are supportive of one's ego and comfort, they will not want to consider truth from someone else unless they have trust and faith in them and enough detachment to accept what they say. Embracing truth is an austerity. And therefore, those who do it, we revere. Because they're making personal sacrifice. They will not allow their attachments to get in the way of what is true. Therefore, we revere someone who can stand by truth. To the extent that they will give up their life for truth. And we're meant to give up our life for truth, if it comes down to that. So faith is so important to find that person that we can put ourselves before and say, Sishashteham, Sadimam, Twampam. I am a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. And to say that with conviction and faith, so you will get the instructions that one needs, even if those instructions move out a conception or a thing that we are attached to. So therefore, when speaking, teachers often refer to the acharyas. And Narada will also refer to the acharyas. Who have sung of various means to seek the divine. And it's interesting, the word, it says, exemplars of describe, but it's actually the word for describe is gayati. It means sing. They sing because they're enthusiastic about it. And what is one enthusiastic about more than anything else? It's what they love in relationship. Obviously, everyone's seeking it, only seeking it often in the wrong way. That's why so many modern songs are love songs, because that's what people are seeking. And when they have some conception that of love, even though in this case, what I'm mentioning may be an attachment, they sing. That's the expression of love, is kirtan, is singing, it's joy. So their exemplars are talking about the means to achieve what? Love. And to achieve that which they love. If you really have love for someone, you like when others love them too. That's pure love. Even it's said about Srimati Radharani, she has a main competitor, Chandravali. She competes with Chandravali, but only because she feels she has a greater capacity to please Krishna. If Chandravali had a greater capacity, then Radharani would serve her. So that's love. So, exemplars have sung of the various means. Verse 35, we'll just touch on this today. Tatu Vishaya Tyaga Sangha Tyaga. One achieves bhakti by giving up sense gratification and mundane association. Purport, vishaya refers to the object of sense enjoyment, and one who indulges in sense enjoyment is called a vishayi. A vishayi cannot succeed in devotional service. The acharyas therefore set down regulations for eating, mating, and so on. Narada states that one should not only give up gross practices of sense indulgence, but one should stop thinking of it. Sense gratification. The word sangha tyag indicates that one should refrain from associating with sense objects even within the mind and heart. The acharyas of all religions so consistently recommend such renunciation of sense pleasure that the need for it may seem a truism. But to practice it is not easy. And yet if we want to advance in bhakti, practice it we must, as Lord Krishna says. It is called renunciation, you should know, to be the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme. O son of Pandu, one could never become a yogi unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. Bhagavad Gita 6.2. A Krishna-conscious method of renunciation is to engage the mind and senses in devotional service. As Rupa Goswami says in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 2.2.55, Anasaptasya Vishayan Yataham Upayanjita Yadanda Krishna Sambande Yuktavairagya Mut. When one is not attached to anything, but simultaneously accepts everything in relationship to Krishna, One is situated above possessiveness. An active devotee is more complete in his renunciation than one who rejects material things without knowledge their relationship to Krishna. This method of Yukta Vairagya gives one great freedom, but it must be done rightly, Srila Prabhupada says. One should, however, note that after doing something whimsically, he should not offer the results to the Supreme Lord. One should act according to Krishna, which comes through the disciplined succession of the bona fide spiritual master. 1857, purple in short. Sinful activity cannot be brought under the purview of offering everything to Krishna. Indeed, Srila Prabhupada will not accept disciples unless they agree to follow the four regulative principles: no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, and no meat eating. We can't finish the purport. I don't have time, but I'll say. So, there's a it's energy. And if you analyze honestly your life, see how much energy is spent in the pursuit of the false conception of life. I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. In one seminar, Satchinandana Swami quoted some Persian scholar. He said, you know, he was talking to other saints, and admit it, on your forehead is written so clearly, please me, please me. It's so subtle. Walking it's so subtle whether we are actually working for the pleasure of Krishna or working for our own ego, even in devotional service. Really, what is the center of your activities? What is the center of your consciousness? What is the center of your world? Is it Guru and Krishna? Are we in the mood of servants? Or are our subtle thoughts and minds and vrittis and transformation of the consciousness going me, 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 me? So here it's saying, basically, it's going to discuss different ways by bhajan and by kirtan, but by relinquishing a particular conception that puts you in the center of everything. Where you look at things as objects, your desire to enjoy and control. Then it's discussed the Vaishnava conception of renunciation is a little different. Putting God in the center . We look at objects and ourselves in relationship to that universal desire as manifest through the devotees in Shastra. And we surrender to that. We shift from seeing things as an object to seeing ourselves as the object. And that's humility. And that's the platform of love. And that's the platform where one bows his head and folds his hands. And that's the platform of the ultimate beauty of the soul. And we know it. Because we see those who are actually have that humility. yesterday, when we went to this place, this temple, behind the deity, they had this painting. And they claimed it was a painting of Lord Chaitanya taking sannyas that was done at the time Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. Anyway, the painting's hundreds of years old. It's behind the deities. But the person that, you know, whose father is the Mahant and he's the son, maybe he's, you know, the father's 80, first son must be near 50. The Giriraj Swami, who's very, very sensitive, is pointing out the just natural humility of the person. It just imbues from every pore of the body. I don't want to control. I don't want to enjoy. I want to love and I want to serve. And I don't have an inflated conception of myself. And you can see it. Not a lack of self-esteem. It's true humility. And one has a real conception of oneself. That's all. It's not a psychological aberration or a psychological disturbance. It's an absolute joy. And it's just such a pleasure to see. It's so attractive. So it's not anything artificial. It begins initially with how we place ourselves in the position of servant. Okay, I'm going to have to stop here. I can take maybe one question, and then if anybody'd like to say hello.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Yeah, Hare Krishna.
Yeah, this I just want to refer to that Eric Fromm quote or reference that, you know, I'm just saying that for me, I feel that the one of the biggest, if not the biggest, problems I have or obstacles or whatever is the, you know, that because trying to get past the fact that acting spontaneously for Krishna's happiness, you have to start with practicing it, which means that in the practice stage, it doesn't feel spontaneous. It feels artificial. And it's so hard to get past that artificiality. You know, I'm saying with my mouth, Krishna, I want to do this for your pleasure. And it's and a statement like that is supposed to come from the heart, not just from the mouth. Yet we are instructed that, well, if we just keep practicing, saying that while we're doing our service, then it will turn into spontaneous. But it's so, you know, it just feels so unnatural. And that unnatural feeling is so difficult for me to deal with, you know.
Well, it's not supposed to be just natural. It's not supposed to be just natural. You know, forced and things like that. Pramanda, Vamate, Konya, Bhagavanji, Guru Krishna Prasadi. There's a bhakti lata bij. There's some experience. It may not be mature experience. But if, you know, somehow or other, after having that experience, and somehow or other, sometimes it wanes or sometimes we don't feel like it, we still do it. But it should be out of love. Even if we don't feel like it, it still should be out of love. But the love has to be there. The feeling, the relationship, it's just like dealing with a family or children you love. You know, there should be love there. And out of love, sometimes you'll do things even if you're tired, but there should be some love, some feeling there. And there is. Otherwise, we're not taking to this path. Because somehow or other, that's how it begins, with some attraction to Krishna and some attraction to devotees. And then if there isn't love, then, you know, and one's feeling some despondency or that, then like Vyasadeva, one has to go into one's heart and see what's wrong. You know, what are the offenses that I'm committing that's actually preventing the devotion? Or what are the things that I'm not doing? Or what is the anchor of attachment I have? Like Bhaktisiddhanta described the boat, you know, the wedding party. They rowed all night. When they woke up, they were in the same place. They couldn't understand what happened. And then they saw there was an anchor, you know. So sometimes there is some kind of obstacle or something that we have to see. But it's not that there's not bhakti. It's just that it's not manifesting to the degree that we want. And we have to see why. And then the other thing is, we look and we see that actually speaking, relatively speaking, you know, we are new at the same time. You know, it's not that we've been practicing for so long. But at the same sense, the feelings of devotion in the heart and those sentiments of love and feeling can come if one is actually doing what they're supposed to be doing. So if they're not coming, then we have to sincerely inquire why and be ready to understand and hear the reason. Gail, we have to, I haven't been able to do that. My phone broke, but we have to talk also personally again.
Okay, thank you, Maharaj.
Anybody like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj, this is Brajaraja Devi.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I heard you also at the beginning. You were kind enough to lend a voice, which is important for me to begin. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, we'll end for today. I'll just look at the list. Hare Krishna.